Syncretism is when you take some Christianity and you mix it with a lot of other stuff and come up with your own concoction. Syncretism. And that's what was happening with the believers at Colossae.
This is Straight Talk.
This is Straight Talk Radio. My name is Joshua Halyk. Happy to be your host today. So excited that you tuned in. We believe God is going to speak to you straight from His Word, straight to your heart, straight to the point. Today, we are in a series called First Things First. We're in the book of Colossians, and this is theology for everyday life. The Apostle Paul is breaking down huge theological ideas for the average guy, average girl, people like you and me. Today, the message that Pastor Mark is bringing is titled Mixed Up Christianity, and he's in Colossians chapter 1, verses 15 through 23. This is the passage that many people go wrong on. Cults are born out of the misunderstanding of who Jesus is. This is incredibly important, and you may not know this. You may have skipped over this portion of the Bible. You may not have read this, and it has relevance because who God is determines how we see Him and think about Him and think about ourselves. And so today, as we get into the message, my encouragement is if you have not downloaded the Straight Talk app, you want to do that today because you might love this message or another message and want to share it with somebody. And it is the fastest, easiest way to share a message. You just click the share button and you could text it to somebody, email it to somebody, post it on a social media. So easy. The way to get that app is to go to PastorMarkJobe.com and download it for free. This is Mixed Up Christianity in our First Things First series. We're in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. Let's go there now.
First things first. How to keep our priorities straight. I don't know about you, but I feel like there's a lot of things that are demanding or asking to be a priority in your life. Your doctor, your children, your husband, your boyfriend, your accountant, your job. There's a lot of competing priorities in our life. And it is difficult to try to keep the first things first. Because sometimes number 5 makes its way to the top and number 10 starts competing to be number 1 in our life. And sometimes we live lives where we feel like we're juggling a lot of things and everything wants a piece of us. And how do we keep the main things in our life? That's a challenge. It's a juggling act and we have to recalibrate our life often to make sure that our life does not get off course. The Apostle Paul was basically talking to a group of believers that was struggling. They lived in a city by the name of Colossae. This is a group of people that existed 2,000 years ago, but some of their challenges and problems are the same problems and challenges that you and I have today, 2,000 years later. And this entire book of Colossians is written to people that are struggling to maintain their priorities. And the Apostle Paul is teaching them how to get their priorities straight and how to keep their priorities straight. And one of the issues that came up in his teaching was that a lot of them were starting to buy in to pop culture spirituality. And so he's trying to teach them how to make Jesus Christ the center of their marriage and their work and their spirituality and keeping the first things first. And he's explaining to them how sometimes our Christianity gets watered down and we have to try to get an undiluted version of Christianity. All right? Now, I have a 14-year-old son and, you know, his goal in life is to beat me at sports all the time. You know, that's his. And so, fortunately, so far, I can still, I'm still able to beat him. We've been, the last couple of weeks, we've been running together. And yesterday we did 3 miles, him and I and one of his buddies. And I'm happy to say I ended up first, only by a few paces there. And I told him, hey, by the time you're 15 or 16, you're going to beat me like big time. And so I'm just enjoying the fact that I can still be in shape and still run as fast as you can. But I know soon you will pass me up and I'll be the old man. Just kind of say, go ahead, son. Don't wait for me. So we've been sort of trying to get in shape and I was the other day, a couple weeks back, I had a blender. And I got my blender, and I was trying to have something healthy to drink. So I got some bananas and blended it in there, and I put some strawberries in there and some yogurt and some milk, and I blended it all together, and I was having this healthy drink. And so my son Josiah saw me. He said, "What are you doing, Dad?" I said, "I'm trying to eat healthy. This is a healthy drink." So 2 days later, I saw him with the blender, and he was making himself a drink as well. I said, "Son, what are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm doing what you did. I'm making myself one of these health drinks." I thought, wow, that's pretty good. He's making himself one of this health. I said, "Son, what are you putting in that health drink of yours?" He said, "You don't want to know." I said, "Oh, yeah, I do want to know. What are you putting in there?" And so he pulls out from behind his back a big container of chocolate ice cream. See, he was dumping globs of chocolate ice cream. I said, "Son, that's not a healthy drink. That's just pure sugar." He said, no, Dad, wait." He said, "I'm also putting this," and he puts a half a banana in his chocolate ice cream, and he calls it a healthy drink. And what I told him is, "Son, listen, you've missed the whole point, because you have too much sugar and you have too much garbage in there. So it's not a healthy drink. Although you contain a little health in it, it's not healthy because it's diluted. You've mixed too much garbage in with the good. You have a little fruit in there, but you have a lot more garbage than you have good." Here's the same thing with Christianity. See, a lot of us today, we have a little Christianity in our life, and we have some of the DNA of our Christianity. We put it in there, but we've gotten a little bit of pop spirituality from over there. We blend it in, and we see Dr. Phil, and he's got some good advice, and we put it in here, and we read one of Oprah's books, and we say, "Yeah, that's some good stuff over there. And let me put it in here." And then some guy at work gives us a good little philosophy. You say, "Hey, that's a good advice," and we put it in there. And then we talk to our friend, and they have some interesting advice, or someone at the bar tells us, "Hey, I got some advice I'd like to tell you, and I got some good ideas." And we put it in there, and we blend it in to some concoction of Christianity, and we say it's Christianity, but let me tell you, we've diluted our Christianity so much that it's lost its power. And it's lost its effectiveness on our life. And although it contains Christianity, it really is not authentic, undiluted Christianity. The Apostle Paul is talking to the believers at Colossae, and he's trying to explain to them that they had so mixed in some of the culture of the day that their Christianity had become watered down. Now, what were they watering it down with? We can water it down with all of our elements. What happened to be very popular in the days of the Colossian believers was it wasn't a religion, but it was a philosophy of thinking that was called Gnosticism. Gnosticism believed the word gnosis, that Gnosticism comes from, is the word knowledge. And the Gnostics basically believed that there was good in all religion, that all religion represented some truth, but that in order to really become enlightened, that you needed to know the truth from enlightenment, and you would get to know the truth from enlightenment through mystical experiences, or through interpretation of sacred writings, or through spiritual experiences, through the help of angelic or spiritual beings, and they would lead you to a deeper form of knowledge. And so what the believers had done is they'd taken some Christianity, and they'd mixed it in with Gnosticism. And so some of them were trying to make contact with angels. Some of them were saying, "Well, I had this dream and my dream said this." And some of them were trying to have these mystical experiences. And some of them were reading all this literature and mixing it in with Christianity. And the Apostle Paul is saying, time out. Hold on a second. If you're going to call yourself a Christian, you need to know what a Christian is. And we need to make sure we go back to an undiluted, not watered down version of what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And so he jumps in. By the way, if we were to name this a word, the theologians or sociologists call this mixing together, they call it syncretism. Syncretism is when you take some Christianity and you mix it with a lot of other stuff and come up with your own concoction. Syncretism. And that's what was happening with the believers at Colossae. So the Apostle Paul is trying to explain to them, this is how you straighten it out. And I'm going to begin reading here in verse 15 of chapter 1. As Paul begins to say, if you're really going to call yourself a Christian, you have to make sure you understand, first of all, who Christ is. Now, so to release the full power of Christianity, you need to embrace the undiluted, unwatered-down version of Christianity. You see, here's why this is so important. If you get gasoline and you water it down, the gasoline stops working to power your car. Right? It may contain gasoline, but if you mix it with water, your car's going to start to sputter and eventually your car's going to stop. I know some people that say they're trying Christianity, but their life is sputtering. And their life is stalled. And it seems like there's very little power in their Christianity to transform their lives. And you ask them, are you a Christian? They say, yeah, I'm a Christian, but it doesn't seem to be working. I mean, I've known about Jesus since I was a little kid, but I don't know. I have all these problems, all this struggle. And the question I'm asking is, are you sure you're getting the straight Christianity that comes, or are you getting it so mixed up that it's lost its power to transform lives? Because diluted power ends up being useless to change our lives. I believe that the gospel and Christianity has tremendous power to change any life. In fact, I want you to hear me well. It doesn't matter to me today what you're struggling with, what you're going through. I believe that there is power to help you overcome whatever you may be going through today. You say, well, Mark, you don't understand, man. I've been struggling for a long time with this addictive, compulsive behavior. And I've been in rehab. I've tried this. I've tried that. I haven't been able to overcome it. I want to say there is power. Every day in God, every day is a new day to start over. And God gives us a chance to begin for the first time again to transform our lives. So I want you to know there's hope for you. God's not done with you yet. In fact, why don't you tell the person beside you, hey, God's not finished with you yet. Come on, that's okay. Hey, we're a work. We are construction. We're a construction zone. God's still working on our lives.
We'll be right back with Pastor Mark Jobe in a moment. You are listening to a Straight Talk message entitled Mixed Up Christianity. It's part of our series called First Things First. After tonight's broadcast, I'll tell you more about how you can get a free copy of this message, as well as give you information regarding Pastor Mark and his ministry at New Life Community Church in Chicago. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Mark. We're in the book of Colossians, chapter 1, with his message, Mixed Up Christianity.
So we start off with the unveiling of the real Jesus. I'm talking about undiluted, trying to unmix our mixed up Christianity. The first thing that the Apostle Paul says, and most scholars believe that verse 15 through verse 19 is actually a hymn or a poem that the early church used to remember deep theology. How many of you know that sometimes we remember things better if it's put to a song or if it's a hymn, right? In fact, some of you, the first time you learned the ABCs, you were young, you were 4 or 5 years old, and you still remember how it goes? A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And even some of you till this day, you're 34 years old, and I ask you, does G come before F? And you have to go, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L. Okay? Because you learned your ABCs on the back of a song. I grew up studying in Spain. And for some awkward reason, I don't know why, they would have us memorize the geography of rivers. Where the river starts, where the valley it goes through, what town it runs through, and where it ends in the ocean. And to this day, I still remember some of the geography because the song. Miño, nace en Fuente Miño, provincia de Lugo, pasa por Lugo, Orense, tú, y desemboca en el Cantabria. It's in Spanish. It's the whole trajectory of a river. And I still remember the river. Why? Because of the song. Well, Paul was teaching theology to these believers, and a lot of the early believers learned their theology through songs. Theology was tied into hymnology. They also learned it through visual images. For example, in a church like this, oftentimes the stained glass windows taught theology. The architecture of a building taught theology. The tabernacle taught theology. One of my favorite symbols that I learned recently comes from the Orthodox Church teaching theology. It's in a hand symbol. Have you ever seen paintings with this hand symbol? Have you ever seen it? Like long robes, guy with a long beard, and they're going like this. Okay, this is a sign of theology. The two fingers put together at the top refer to the dual nature of Christ. All God, all man, wrapped in one. The three fingers put together at the bottom refer to the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So who is Christ? All God, all man, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, wrapped up in a simple single. Now, don't go around Chicago like this or anything like that. You may get in trouble, all right? People may not understand what your hand signal is, but, you know, in the church, it's okay to do it for a visual expression and understanding. So the Apostle Paul begins to teach the theology of Christ. He's saying, you've mixed Jesus up with a lot of other understanding of who he is. If I were to go to the street right now, probably 99% of the people who I talk to would say, I believe in Jesus. My question is not, do you believe in Jesus, but what Jesus do you believe in? Because some people believe in Jesus and go to the street and say, you sure I believe in Jesus? Well, tell me about your belief in Jesus. Well, I believe he was a Jewish Galilean peasant that brought about a revolution and stood up to the system. Yay, a revolutionary. I believe in Jesus. And someone else may say, I really believe in Jesus. He was a good model of a peace-loving individual with good moral teachings for humanity. And people, they say, well, I'm a believer in Jesus. But I want to go much further than that. Because the Jesus of the Bible was not just a moral teacher leading a revolution like Gandhi. He was not just simply a good model and reformer to give equal rights to a lot of people like Martin Luther King Jr. He was much more than that. According to biblical Christianity, he is in a category that is all by itself. And if you're going to embrace biblical Christianity, you must understand the Christ of this Christianity. So let's take a look at what it means to embrace an undiluted version of Christianity. So he begins by saying this. He says, he is, referring to Jesus, the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him, listen, and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have supremacy. For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Now, can you imagine that being sung or that being quoted in a poetic form? The early church spoke of this often. So let's break it down for a second. Let's unveil the undiluted, unwatered down version of Jesus. By the way, I don't know what image you have of Jesus in your mind, but some of you were raised with sort of a Hollywood blonde, blue-eyed, effeminate-looking Jesus. who looks like he's sad all the time. Sunken in cheeks. Real sober. Real delicate. Like if you slap him on the back, he'd fall over. I really don't think that's how Jesus was. He's the son of a carpenter. I think he was a tough guy. I think he had muscles. I think he had calluses on his hands. I think his hair was dark. I think he had an olive complexion. He was a Jewish guy. As a carpenter, not this effeminate sort of, you know, hit me on the back, I'll fall over. And, you know, this was Jesus. So let's get beyond that picture of Jesus, okay? Now let's get to the essence of who Jesus was. The first thing I want you to know about the unveiling of Jesus is this. He is the image of the invisible God. Now you say, well, Pastor Mark, aren't we all created in the image of God? Well, yes, we are, but there's a distinct difference between Jesus and us. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, it says, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. When it refers to Jesus, it says he is the image of the invisible God. He is not made in the image, but he is the image. Do you notice there's a difference there? To be in the image of something means that you are like it. To be the image of something means that you are it. When you look into the mirror and you see your image, it is a reflection of who you are. When someone looks at your sibling, your brother and sister, and says, hey, they look like you, it means they are different from you, but they have your characteristics. When you look at yourself in the mirror, you don't say, well, hey, that person looks like me. No, that is you. You don't say, hey, that person kind of, you know, I'm more handsome than they are, but they kind of look like me. No, no, wait a second. That is a reflection or the image of you. Paul says that Jesus Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. The first Christ is referred to as the second Adam. Okay, the first Adam was born without a sin nature and lived on this earth, but then he fell and inherited a sin nature, and he's passed out that sin nature to everybody who's come after him. The reason that Jesus is called the second Adam is that what the first Adam and the second Adam have in common is they both were born without a sin nature. That is why Jesus had to be born of a virgin birth. If he would have been born through the natural means of conception, he would have inherited the sin nature. He had to bypass the seed of man and be born of a virgin so that he could be born without sin. Okay, are you tracking with me? This is really important. This is not a minor in Christianity. This is a major in Christianity. And it says that he has become the reflection of the invisible God. Notice what Jesus said in John chapter 14, verse 9. It almost got Jesus killed because Jesus looked at a crowd of people and he said this, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father, because I and the Father are one. Now, the Jewish people understood what he was saying. In fact, they understood it so much that they were ready to stone him, because they understood that Jesus was claiming more than just a creation. He was claiming to be God. I and the Father are one. I am the visible image of the invisible God. If you have seen me, you have seen God. I am God. Now, a lot of people are thrown off by this a bit, and let me explain this for a second by the next phrase that's stated here. It says he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. You said, aha, well, if he's the firstborn, how could he be God if he's born of God? He must be the Son of God, so it means that God the Father existed before the Son, and then somehow the Father created the Son at a latter time. because he's called the firstborn over all creation.
You've been listening to Pastor Mark Job of New Life Community Church and Moody Bible Institute's new president with the first half of his message called Mixed Up Christianity, which is part of our new series called First Things First. Please join us again on the next Straight Talk for the second half. Before you go, we invite you to download our free Straight Talk app at PastorMarkJob.com. That's PastorMarkJob, J-O-B-E.com. There you can download this evening's message for free and find a link to our New Life Community Church ministry page where you can browse the ministry of Pastor Mark Job. You'll also find a Bible app and over 400 other messages that we think will definitely encourage you. If you have any questions about our program or just need some prayer, you can call our office at 773-585-3300. That's 773-585-3300. On behalf of Pastor Mark, myself, and our Straight Talk team, we thank you for listening. Please do tune in again for another edition of Straight Talk, and have a great evening. God bless.